How can workers and young people fight for democratic rights? Claire Doyle, Committee for a Workers International, CWI. Thousands of protesters took to the streets of Hong Kong on the 1st of July on the 23rd anniversary of the settlement between London and Beijing, which marked the end of more than 150 years of British rule of the colony. Under the 1997 treaty, there was to be a 50-year period of compromise with the Chinese Communist government, labeled One Country, Two Systems. The demonstrators were expressing their anger at Beijing's recent move to impose direct rule in Hong Kong, ending its limited autonomy. In May, the National People's Congress of China approved a proposal for the Beijing government to use its own forces to impose order on Hong Kong. It came into effect on the 30th of June, and will stop, prevent, and punish acts of secession, subversion, terrorism, and collusion with foreign forces, which endanger national security. Trials could possibly be held in mainland courts, and sentences could range from fines and restraints on activities to detention for life in the notorious camps or prisons on the mainland of China, and even the possibility of execution in extreme cases. Street protests. The scenes on the 1st of July of demonstrators facing tear gas, water cannon, pepper spray and rubber bullets from police, differed little from those seen for months last year over a proposed extradition law, which was dropped, and in pursuit of five basic democratic demands. Well over 2 million of Hong Kong's 7.5 million population, predominantly youth, are estimated to have been involved in street demonstrations last year, and tens of thousands of them arrested. Some are still held in detention. Their determination was exemplified by the youth who went into each battle with written wills in their pockets, prepared literally to die for their cause. The coronavirus outbreak brought those mass protests to a halt. But the easing of the lockdown saw brave and determined demonstrators back on the streets. On the 1st of July, riot police arrested more than 370 demonstrators, including Hong Kong parliamentarian Ray Chan. Just 10 were charged under the new security law and quite rapidly released. However, books and literature that Beijing deems a threat have now been removed from libraries. Chinese state forces are already based in Hong Kong, but can now be supplemented by additional forces from the mainland. Beijing has appointed Liu Huning as an advisor to Carrie Lam, head of Hong Kong's legislature and already a puppet of Beijing. Lam told opponents not to challenge the law or the consequences would be serious. Huning's task is to oversee the implementation of the new security law, backed up by a new security agency headed by Guangdong official Zheng Yangsheng. Zheng is notorious for his central role in the vicious crushing of mass protest in Wuhan, China, in 2011, and elsewhere. Western governments. The heads of European governments have voiced objections, but not too strongly. The European Union managed a five-sentence declaration promising to raise the issue in our continuing dialogue with China. On the other hand, Boris Johnson in Britain, whose popularity is flagging, has been quick to condemn Beijing's move, and offer unconditional citizenship to all 3 million Hong Kong residents eligible for British National Overseas, BNO, passports. However, Tory Foreign Secretary, Dominic Raab actually admitted, that the government would not be able to coercively force China, to allow BNO citizens to travel. Many will anyway not want to leave Asia. Britain has sizable interests in banks and businesses in Hong Kong established over a century and a half as the colonial power. Today's Tory government sheds crocodile tears over the lack of democratic rights in the territory, and poses as the friend of the harassed citizens of Hong Kong. But British governments have long tolerated the repression of genuine democratic rights in Hong Kong, along with those in China, in the interests of trade, investment and banking, that have made big profits for British enterprises. One of the problems of the British government taking a hard line over the security law is indicated by the early declaration of the sizable London-based bank HSBC, that it will abide by the new security law. Hong Kong's stock market actually rose in the week after the law was passed, indicating renewed confidence among investors, and funds poured in from Beijing. Calling on Britain's partners in the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance, Australia, New Zealand, Canada and the US, to act decisively against China, and promising to pull out of deals with giant Chinese firms like Huawei for security reasons, the British government is falling in with the approach taken by Donald Trump. Not long ago, Trump was calling Xi Jinping the greatest leader in Chinese history. According to his former security advisor, John Bolton, Trump considered that the herding of a million Uyghurs into Chinese prison camps was exactly the right thing to do. That was when Trump was seeking a truce in the trade war between the world's two major powers, so that China would buy more US products. Now, in his battle for the White House, Trump portrays Xi as the greatest enemy of the US. Under US pressure, WhatsApp, Facebook and Telegram are pausing cooperation with data requests from Hong Kong authorities. China's President Xi Jinping is not immune from criticism at home. The economy is experiencing its slowest growth for three decades, and a big rise in unemployment. Discontent is accumulating over both the state's handling of the pandemic and the failure to eliminate mass poverty. An aggressive policy over Hong Kong can be an attempt to galvanize support at home, as are China's naval exercises in waters around Vietnam, the Philippines, and the Paracel Islands in the South China Sea. China's move to clamp down on Hong Kong may not go to the lengths of a full-scale military clampdown or Xiamen solution. If Beijing's move to threaten maximum use of force succeeds in eliminating opposition on the streets of Hong Kong and paralyzes the struggle for even minimum basic democratic rights, the Chinese regime may not need to implement all the clauses of the new security law. Just the very real threat has seen a number of leaders of the democracy movement emigrate. However, setting up a parliament in exile will not solve the day-to-day problems of working people in Hong Kong. Appealing to the reactionary US or British democratic governments will not take the movement forward. Brave fighters persecuted by the Hong Kong and Chinese authorities have shown enormous resilience and tenacity in refusing to accept dictatorship in any form. There are young people who are absolutely determined to stay in Hong Kong and carry on the fight. Of course, there are times in history when the leadership of forces persecuted by the state have to seek refuge abroad to live to fight another day. But the flight of the leaders of the pro-democracy movement indicates a lack of determination to conduct a fight to the finish. Struggle there have truly been element of a revolutionary situation in Hong Kong in the past year. A few short strikes have taken place in the course of the battle for democracy among workers, including in the health service, on the docks and the transport network. But the independent unions have failed to make a clear call for general strike action. The brave fighters on the streets have fought relentlessly in pursuit of democracy. How much more worthwhile if their bravery and preparedness to fight to the end was channeled by a workers' party into a challenge against capitalism in Hong Kong, across the vast country of China and beyond. The situation is crying out for a party wedded to the idea of state ownership of the commanding heights of the economy, with truly democratic workers' control and management of enterprises, the economy and of society as a whole, through democratically elected and controlled committees, and for genuine workers' democracy. Unless such a struggle is engaged, the Chinese dictatorship and US imperialism will continue to fight out their disagreements to the detriment of the well-being of all working class and poor people. This article can be read in full on socialistworld.net.